Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. It's good to be back. I was on a crazy five-city tour: Vegas, DC, New York, New Jersey, Miami. I went all. I'm travel man. I went all across the country, and I have great stuff to report back to you guys. Now, some of this is going to be in very public announcements that are coming soon. I went and collected some good news for you folks. So, and some of it I'll discuss in the post games for the members, because they're just fun little side stories. Including today, I will discuss what happened when I ran into Will Smith. You remember we had a beef because of what we'd said about Jaden and Willow Smith? Oh, did we come to fisticuffs? TYTnetwork.com/join. That's in the post game today. All right, but this is announcement week on the Young Turks. So, tomorrow we have a very exciting announcement regarding the Justice Democrats. You will be pumped over it. I think you will love it. Okay. On next Monday, we have an important, awesome announcement for you guys about the Young Turks and what we're up to. But okay, those are all wonderful. But the announcement you cannot miss is on Wednesday. Wednesday, top of the show. Okay, you gotta have fun. Let me give you a clue. Because this is the one you got to tell your friends, family, and neighbors, and Randy Gonzalez about. You cannot miss the top of Wednesday's show. Okay, 6 p.m. Eastern. Be a share bear. Okay, we've only, since we've been doing this format of doing 2 hours, and you know, just going through the news. We don't do guests on the main show, right? It's just not what we do. It's not like cable news where they have nonstop guests. We used to have guests. On an older version of the show, but we haven't done that in years and years and years and years. The only guest we've ever had on live during the quote unquote main show is Bernie Sanders. That's the only other person. Okay. On Wednesday, we will have another guest live for, I don't know, equally dramatic reasons. Sounds a bit much, right? We had Bernie on in the heat of the campaign, but maybe not a bit much. What is it? What is it? It's going to be awesome. Okay. And it will probably start a war. Okay. So, fun for everybody. Not a literal one in the world. We're not attacking North Korea. Kim Jong-un will not be in the studio. Okay. So, that's the fun and exciting stuff coming up throughout the week. Exciting stuff coming up in this show is Ted Cruz humiliates himself again. God, I love when that happens. Okay, so that'll be a little bit later, and more clownish Trump moves. Of course, that's also a little bit later in the program. And in the second hour, people yelling at Muslims again. Jesus Christ, Lord mercy. Okay, anyway, then can cops in Alaska have sex with hookers and get away with it? That's an interesting story. I was going to say fun, I guess, depends on your perspective. Anyway, but there's a story so disturbing about fraternities in the second hour that I might have to ban fraternities. I'm sorry, but it wasn't me, okay? They made me do it. So you'll see. So as usual on the Young Turks, a lot of light stuff, a lot of serious stuff. So let's get going on the first thing, which is actually about you guys. I just want to conclude here our Watchdog Journalism program, and you guys were bananas. You were bonkers. You were amazing. In fact, I have an announcement. Okay, now look, you already know it. We crossed 2 million. You guys are unbelievable. I wanted to thank some people about it in a second, but we've hired 12 people already. We're actually going to hire the 13th one because we crossed 2 million. The 12th person we hired was another reporter, Naomi LeChance. She worked The Intercept, NPR, etc. And she's already breaking stories. I love it. And the new hire will be announced soon as well, the last one after having crossed $2 million threshold. But you know, when I was away, I didn't get to read all the names of the people who had donated. I'm just going to do some of the larger donors here. Now everybody's a small donor compared to what happens in the political world. But I wanted to thank Howard from LA, Eric from North Carolina, William from New Mexico, Sean from California, Nicholas from Texas, John from Kentucky, Deborah from New York, DJ from California. I'll get to Deborah and DJ again in a second because they are amazing and they got to name some of the stuff here in the studio and in the offices overall. And that's super cool and fun. Nicholas from New Jersey, Marija from Ontario. Yeah, Ontario, okay. Nicholas from Ontario. Oh, Nick, you're awesome. Okay, Roy from New Jersey, Brian from California. Brian, I know you too, you're awesome as well. All of you are awesome, these are amazing guys. Thomas from South Charleston, Kevin from Keene, Savannah from Grover Beach. Savannah, I've got more on in a second as well. Joe from Sugarloaf Key, Florida. I never heard of Sugarloaf Key, but I gotta check that out. I was just in Florida. Craig in Newport, Glenn in Blacksburg, Virginia. By the way, Newport, West Virginia, that's where Craig's from. Love West Virginia, gonna be a lot of news about West Virginia soon. Philip from Minnesota and Christopher from Illinois. Okay, now, onto the guys that I promised you, okay? We already had Savannah Cooper who had bought Jordan's camera, that's the Savannah that I was referring to earlier. The name is Savannah Cooper, We the People. Savannah did it again, there you go, damn, you did it again, Savannah. So she named the control room, Jesus. From now on, that is the Synapse control room, donated by Savannah Cooper. Okay, so that's it. From now on, we go to the Synapse. Okay, so that's where, of course, our director is. And then we had Adam Westbrook, who had named the desk the Triptych desk, and that's what that is from now on. Stephen Garcia had gotten camera A, which is the main camera in the studio that takes the wide shot. Stephen Garcia also got Nomi's camera. Jacaris Stephen Garcia is what's named. Now we have the Handler family, who has chipped in. From Deborah Handler, and the conference room that we all meet in downstairs, now the Handler family conference room. I love a show by the people, for the people, of the people. Okay, you guys made this happen. So every time those reporters break stories, that was you. Congratulations, and did a fantastic job with it. And here, it's all, your names are all over. We still have the names. By the way, nobody bought my chair. So Nicholas Weil, who endowed the chair now 4 years ago when we built the studio. Hey Nick, it's still your chair, buddy. I love it. So Nick's name will stay on here, but Jeffrey Manziel has bought or endowed Anna's chair now. So both chairs are now endowed. Jeffrey, thank you, thank you, thank you. And now camera D in the studio is DJ Sizzle for DJ Padilla. So, all right, this is what a show from the people looks like, man. Ain't nobody naming cameras at CNN. And since you guys financed all that, we have that special connection to you guys. We love you guys. You guys are the Young Turks, and you are way, way too strong, as I always tell you guys, and you always prove me right on that. So thank you for being part of the Young Turks and making all of this possible. Okay, now you're gonna miss the pro, you're gonna miss the things, you're gonna miss the names, you're gonna miss the can I see. And then 4 years from now, you're gonna be like, come on, do another one. Okay, all right, now let's do some of the news from today. Okay, so we had elections in France, and we were told that the right wing, Le Pen, might win. And so everybody was a little bit worried, especially given what happened with Brexit and Donald Trump here in the US. Well, that didn't happen. Instead, Macron won. He is more of a left wing slash centrist candidate. And he's only 39 years old. So here's the amazing part of the story. It is that it is the first time a non-establishment party has won in France. Now, that is a familiar theme. Now you'll hear me say throughout this story, I told you, okay? So because my main point had been, look guys, people don't want the establishment anymore. We've had 4 to 5 decades of their rule, and people are not believing their lies anymore. They told us that we would all have increasing wages, and that multinational corporations had our best interests in mind, and big business was here to help you, right? And now we found out that just isn't the case. So whether it's Greece or UK or France or America or almost anywhere in the world, everybody's voting in Philippines, right or wrong, voting for outsiders. We don't want the establishment. How clear can we possibly be? Now, Marcon is not some sort of, you know, rebel, revolutionary in that sense, but he started a new party. He has never run for office before, and he's the president of France. Isn't that amazing? And that's in the old days. That would have never happened. But I'm telling you that the revolt has begun. And so this is definitely part of that. So let me give you some of the details of what happened here. Macron is a former member of the Socialist Party who served as economy minister for just 2 years under President François Hollande and was a banker for Rothschild and Company prior to entering politics. Before the presidential election, he had never run for elected office. Amazing. So in Europe and America, for a person like that to win was largely inconceivable in the past, now has become commonplace. Now, again, not exactly a Bernie Sanders style revolutionary here. The guy worked in the financial industry. Television seemed to favor him in France, giving you some idea that the establishment is not overly angry that Macron has won. Obama endorsed him. So it's not like he's got no connections to the establishment, but it is a brand new party and definitely not one of the parties that has traditionally won in France. So it's the voters saying in a sense, okay, had enough of those guys, let's try something new, almost anything new. Now he's a little bit more centrist, so that brings up a second issue that's very interesting. So let's give you more details. Despite Macron's lack of experience, his newly founded political movement, En Marche or Onward, rapidly gained supporters. He took a radical message of criticizing France's political class as ineffectual and corrupt, but applied it to a restrained centrist platform based mostly on moderate economic reforms. Now, I think that this goes to a second told you. Not just that people want outsiders, but it isn't about right wing, left wing. In this case, it was centrist. So now, what did I say during the presidential elections? That if you only give them one populist choice, the American people will take it. So the Democrats gave them an establishment choice, and the right wing gave them a populist choice, Donald Trump. I mean, it's a false populism, of course we know that, but it was an outsider, someone who hadn't been involved in politics, and so they chose it. If you'd given them one on the left, it was far more popular and very likely would have won. And now Bernie Sanders, of course, is the most popular politician in the country. His ratings nearly double President Trump and Hillary Clinton. So if you don't give them an outsider opportunity on your side, they'll vote for the other side, or they'll vote in the middle. Basically, France is saying anyone that isn't part of the corrupt establishment. And so, and even for the left here, and I'm a progressive, but it doesn't mean that you have to be super progressive. Like the most progressive person is the most likely to win. Now, Bernie Sanders in the political spectrum of the Senate is the most progressive person, but I think his real appeal is his honesty. And the fact that he's clearly not corrupt, clearly an outsider, and it's the strength of his positions. It's not the extremeness of the positions, it's how significantly and strongly you hold those positions. So in this case, you had a strong centrist who was an outsider, good enough. So in fact, they explained that after the wider election, you know, obviously with the runoff in France, and the two rivals at the end shared an outsider status, but had radically different vision for France's future. The last two standing were both outsiders. Now, Le Pen had vowed to take France out of the Eurozone and return it to the franc as a national currency. She said she'd hold a referendum on European Union membership, as well as introduce anti-Islam and anti-immigration policies, mimicking the campaign of US President Donald Trump. She promised to pursue a French first agenda, and her election would have been a devastating blow to the EU. Well, this is your third told you. Just because they're an outsider and hence had some popularity doesn't mean that all of France is right wing, or all of America, or all of the UK is right wing. The press just cannot break out of the left-right spectrum thinking. So they're like, oh, Le Pen is rising. It must mean that France is really right-wing. No, she got slaughtered in the general election. Their final results were 66.1 for Macron and 33.9 for Marine Le Pen. So the reality is only 34% of the French were interested in her version of the outsider model, the deeply right-wing version. Overall, not popular. By the way, Donald Trump on the day of the election had an approval rating of only 37%, about where he is today. It's not like he's very popular in America, he's deeply unpopular. The only reason he won was because the Democratic Party put a complete establishment figure, the establishment figure next to him. If you had run a progressive candidate, a populist candidate, an outsider candidate, Donald Trump, like Le Pen, would have almost certainly lost. Now, will the Democratic Party or Washington in general learn that lesson here in America? Unlikely. They'll probably go right back to that left-right spectrum and talk about the same things they always do and support the establishment like they always do. So finally, one more thing that Macron did right. In an interview with Britain's Channel 4 in March, Macron described what he sees as the error of politicians attempting to copy the far right's platform in order to undercut its popularity. Okay, I'm sorry, here's another told you. Now, here in America, again, the Democrats go, no. The right wing's popular, look at Donald Trump, he won, oh my God, they're so popular. Let's copy them. No, that's not the right strategy. Here's Macron's quote. He said, when some people decide to go in the Front National's direction on the political spectrum, that's a big mistake. That's a big mistake because they always prefer the original to the copy. Exactly right, exactly what we've been saying here on this show. So, and by the way, what was the results? He got 66% of the vote, and he's the new president of France when he had never run for election before. Go outsider, be honest, be strong in your positions, and don't bend to the right wing pretending or actually believing that they are right or that the country agrees with them, because they do not. They didn't in France, I don't believe they do in the UK, and they certainly don't here in America. Look at the polling. Give them a strong outsider perspective from the left and you will crush. You will win every election you need to win here in America and certainly throughout Europe as well, and France just showed that. The only question now is whether America is actually listening. I know we are, JusticeDemocrats.com. That's the exact right strategy. Okay, so. Yeah, maybe I don't want the establishment Democrats to listen. Okay, no, I want everybody to get straightened out. All right, let's move to the next story. So there's something called a golden visa. It allows the really wealthy to enter the country by investing here to create jobs. Now, oftentimes they don't create jobs at all. They just buy fancy apartments in New York or some other place and allows them to get a visa here. Now, I'm told that Trump is against kind of these kind of shenanigans with these immigrants coming in here and let alone people doing anchor babies. Oh my God. Well, this is an anchor baby of a different sort, I suppose. Washington Post explains that there is a conference that was held in Beijing. Turns out Trump's son-in-law's family was there. Huh, interesting. Their name was used all over the conference. And in fact, one of the ways that the conference was billed, it said, invest $500,000 and immigrate to the United States. Well, that sounds appealing, I guess, if you're a really wealthy Chinese official, however you got that money and need to get it out of the country and would like to get a passport to America instead of staying in China where you might get caught. Okay. And the Washington Post explains that over several hours of slideshows and presentations, representatives from the Kushner family, huh, that's interesting, as in Jared Kushner, as in Ivanka Trump's husband, from the Kushner family business urged Chinese citizens gathered at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel to consider investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in a New Jersey luxury apartment complex that would help them secure what's known as an investor visa. Hold. Little sick today, had to get a little water there. Okay. Now, Jared Kushner, to be fair, wasn't there, and he says that he divested from this company. We'll get to his amusing excuse on that in a second. But his sister was there, and they were touting this as, hey, invest in the Kushner family, and all of a sudden you might get a golden visa. So let's explain what this visa is. The EB-5 immigrant investor visa program that Meyer, that's Kushner's sister, discussed Saturday allows rich foreign investors who are willing to plunk down large investments in US projects that create jobs, supposedly, to apply to immigrate to the United States. The EB-5 program has been criticized by members of Congress from both parties who have said that the program in essence sells visas to the wealthiest foreigners. Well, that's exactly what it does. If you invest $500,000, I give you a visa. What else would you call that? Okay, the program has been extremely popular among rich Chinese who call it the quote golden visa. And I hear that the Kushners and the Trumps are ready to shower it all over them anyway, and are eager to get their families and their wealth out of the country. Gee, I wonder why. When you're rushing to get your wealth out of the country, there might be something a little wrong here. Now, I wanted to pause here before we get to the Kushner involvement here more thoroughly to note what the Statue of Liberty says. Now, the Statue of Liberty doesn't talk about golden visas and give me your rich and let's make them richer and make sure we can facilitate their corruption and make sure we can move that the money made from that corruption out of their own country. It instead says, keep ancient lands your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, the tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. See, that's what America is supposed to stand for. The golden door for the homeless, the wretched refuse. Not the incredibly wealthy who are willing to practice corruption with the people in power here in America, so they can come here and live off of that corruption. Okay, now turns out Trump guys have been doing this for quite some time. Bloomberg News reported in March of 2016 that the program has been used to the benefit of both the Trump and Kushner family businesses. Before joining the White House as chief executive of his family's real estate company, Jared Kushner raised $50 million from Chinese EB-5 applicants for a Trump branded apartment building in Jersey City, according to the report. So this is an old trick of theirs, but now that they're in power, well, they get to churn this a little bit better and quicker and more efficiently. So during this conference, the highlight of the afternoon was Meyer, a principal for the company, who was introduced in promotional materials as Jared Kushner's sister. So they're like, in case you missed Kushner and her name, it's her middle name, but at this point, obviously, since she's married, we just want to point it out, that is Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law's sister, okay? I don't know if they added the wink or an emoji to go along with it. The potential investors were advised to invest sooner rather than later in case visa rules change under the Trump administration. Quote, invest early and you will invest under the old rules, one speaker said. In other words, hey, look, we're in charge now. I can change the rules on you. You better get in, hurry up. Hurry up, it's like the most old school scam there is. Hey, look, man, there's only a limited room available. You might want to rush in now, otherwise, I can't tell you. Maybe we change the rules on you. We are in charge. Did I mention this is Jared Kushner's sister? Okay. Now, here's their excuse. Mr. Kushner divested his interest, his attorney says, in the One Journal Square project by selling them to a family trust that he is not a beneficiary of, a mechanism suggested by the Office of Government Ethics. Now that'll take care of it. No, I gave it to my family. Oh, so then I see you have no interest in it anymore. I mean, it is preposterous. Could you imagine? I mean, look, anybody here. Anna's like, oh no, it's okay, I gave it to my brother. I don't care about him. No, will he come back to help me? No, not at all. Us working together and emphasizing that she's my sister? No, of course not. Now, one of the investors that heard all this said, even though this is the project of the son-in-law's family, of course, it is still affiliated. In other words, yeah, we got it. We invest in this, we get a visa, and we get special treatment from the White House. Not complicated, okay. There was a Washington Post and a New York Times reporter in this conference. They're taking notes, etc. Now, this is open to the public. All of a sudden, they get a visit from the people putting the conference together. And the Washington Post explains, journalists were initially seated at the back of the ballroom, but as the presentations got underway, a public relations representative asked the Washington Post to leave, saying the presence of four reporters threatened the stability of the event. Indeed. It has become a little bit more unstable now that we realize what kind of scam that they're running. So they even grabbed the reporter's mic and backpack and tried to physically escort him out. They surrounded the participants of the meeting on their way out so that the reporters couldn't talk to them. Asked why the reporters were asked to leave, a PR person who declined to identify herself said simply, "This is not the story we want." Well, that's true, that's not the story you wanted, but it's the story you got, because that's the real story. And then maybe my favorite part is, after all this is out, the Kushner family has the temerity to put out this statement. Sorry. Forever known as the Rubio. On a 10-day trip, there's no way I'm not coming back sick. That's too many plane rides not to get sick. Basically, two red eyes. Oh, I gotta tell you a story about American Airlines. We'll save that for the post game. Hold. Okay. They put out a statement saying Kushner Companies had nothing to do with it. Oh, they had nothing to do with it. Jesus, can I see a picture of the conference real quick? That appears to be a giant, I don't speak Chinese, but that appears to be a giant Kushner in the middle of the screen behind her. Also another Kushner on the right hand upper corner right there as well, in case it wasn't clear enough. I don't know what it says in Chinese, but it might say Kushner. I don't know what the, Kushner's had nothing to do with this. I don't know what you're talking about, Kushner. Where's the Kushner part? We got it, guys. You want to benefit off of your connections. It should be noted for the record, that's illegal. We'll see if anything ever comes of it. Okay, I've got a lot more for you guys, including healthcare. Apparently, I need it, but I got to take a break here. Let's come back. I'll tell you an outrageous thing that a Republican said about healthcare, and then, as usual, Ted Cruz gets humiliated. Let's come back. All right, back on the Young Turks. Let me read some tweets for you guys. Now, Mole says, when you're at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter and all you want to do is watch TYT live. Okay, God bless. You can make that happen. I don't know if you know this, it's on your phones. It's also could be on your TV in your living room. It could be anywhere, we're everywhere. Sean Buffard writes in, Cenk Uygur does the longest pre-news story announcements ever. You are correct, Sean. Sorry. I'm just trying to keep you filled in. All right, Ashley B says, if Macron can become president of France without running for office before, we can do anything. That is absolutely right. Rita Ann says, the Trump family is selling off our country piece by piece. Traitors. In fact, I kind of have another story about that in a second. And David says, no, Statue of Liberty is now accepting bribes. So give me your really rich, your corrupt, and make sure they have pockets full of money, stuff them into my creases here. I mean, what they have done to pervert the American idea is gross. All right, now let's go to the next story, also about corruption. Okay. Really interesting story coming out from James Dodson. He's a golf writer. So what does this have to do with politics? Well, you'll see in a second. He's talking to NPR's Only a Game. Now, he has co-written a book in the past with Arnold Palmer, and he's an esteemed golf writer, having nothing to do with politics before. He was talking on Friday about a remark that came during a tour of the recently renamed Trump National Golf Club Charlotte. Ah, interesting. So he explained that 3 years ago in 2014, this is what happened. He said, so when I got into a cart with Eric Trump, as we were setting off, I said, Eric, who's funding? I know no banks because of the recession, the Great Recession, have touched a golf course. You know, no one's funding any kind of golf construction. It's dead in the water the last 4 or 5 years. And this is what he said. He said, quote, well, we don't rely on American banks. We have all the funding we need out of Russia. I said, really? And he said, oh yeah, we've got some guys that really, really love golf. I'm sure that's why they did it. And they're really invested in our programs. We just go there all the time. Well, that's very interesting. So this is obviously very relevant because a lot of theories revolve around how Trump had a lot of his projects financed by the Russians, well before he got into the presidential race, and that perhaps he owed the Russians a lot of money, and that perhaps that could be part of the connection as to why they helped him in the race. And now that is the conclusion of our intelligence agencies and what they might have expected in return. Okay. Now, of course, the Trumps come out and furiously deny this. Shocking. Eric Trump says, it's a recollection from some guy 3 years ago through a third person. No, it's not through a third person. It's the guy you talked to. And 3 years ago is not like 30 years ago. That's fairly easy to remember, especially when you say something memorable like, no, the Russians are financing all our golf courses. That's how we got the loans in the middle of the recession. We're going to have to do a drinking game today of every time I drink, you drink. Although I don't want to get you drunk. Could you imagine if this was alcohol? It'd be so badass. No, just water. Okay, hold on, almost there. Eric Trump then went on to say, we have zero ties to Russian investors. Zero ties. In fact, back in January, Donald Trump had said something very similar. He said, Russia has never tried to use leverage over me. And then in caps, because he's a child, I have nothing to do with Russia. No deals, no loans, no nothing. It's a clown. By the way, when you write it like that, you know what's the first thing I think? Oh, this guy's got to deal with the Russians. Okay, take it easy, big guy. So now, I give you all of that because they said no deals ever with the Russians. But back in 2008, Donald Trump Jr. had said this. And in terms of high-end product influx into the US, Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets, say in Dubai, and certainly with our project in Soho, and anywhere in New York, we see a lot of money pouring in from Russia. From Russia with considerable love. So, which one is it? My guess is that back when they didn't think they were running for president, or they didn't know that people were going to find out about how much money they owed the Russians, or that it was ever going to be relevant in the public, that they were telling the truth. Why would you make up a lie in 08 about how you're getting all this Russian money pouring into your assets in Soho, New York, etc.? Why would you randomly tell a guy that works as a golf writer about, oh no, don't worry about it, all these things are funded by the Russians? Unless it was true. It's a super, super weird thing to make up, right? And now, if you think, no, they would never lie when it is super important for them not to get caught, then I guess you're awfully naive, to say the least. So, if you're a Trump fan, hang in there, brother, man. No. I'm sure you believe that Donald Trump Jr. back then lying about the Russians, because Donald Trump Jr. is a total liar, right? And Eric Trump, liar too, when he said that the Russians were financing the golf courses. No way, man. Those kids, they're no good liars, you know. Or you could pretend for the rest of your life that everything is fake news. No, even when you quote the Trumps, it's fake. But they said it, it's obvious, it's right there, right? The Donald Trump Jr. one is in public. I don't know, the world is fake. Okay, good luck to you, brother. If you borrowed this much money from the Russians, guess what? There's a record of it. Did you pay him back? How much did you owe him? This dude's gonna get caught. He could write in all caps all he likes, he's gonna get caught. Okay. Gee, I wonder why he wouldn't release his tax returns. I can't quite figure it out. Okay, now let's go to another Republican. Drink. Okay, no, not Flim Flam Man. Let's go to Labrador. I'm going to go to him. No, I'm coming to you guys in a sec. Hold. Give me one more. You got Labrador, you got dog barking up the wrong tree. I know it's in there somewhere. There we go. Okay. Get it, wrong tree, Labrador. Anyways, okay. Representative Raul Labrador is a very good servant of the donor class. Now, he would claim that he's very conservative. Okay, sure. Whatever gets you through the night. So he's one of the guys defending this healthcare proposal of the Republicans in the House, and he's one of the guys who drove it to be even more conservative. So right now it has $765 billion in tax cuts for the rich. What a wonderful coincidence. It also happens to cut $800 billion from Medicaid. According to the last estimate of the less draconian plan, it cuts 24 million from the healthcare rolls. So 24 million Americans won't have healthcare anymore. But no, he doesn't work for the rich. It's just he believes in freedom. The freedom that you go and die wherever you die when you don't have insurance, I don't really care about you. And the freedom to take big checks from my big donors. I wonder what kind of dog works in this fashion. Okay, a loyal one probably, a donor's best friend. Okay, so now his constituents not awfully happy about this because some of them are going to lose their health care and they kind of like Medicaid. I think a lot of people do. So they asked him about it and it didn't go well for Labrador. Let's watch.
You are mandating people on Medicaid except dying. You are making them.
No one wants anybody to die. You know, that line is so indefensible. Nobody dies because they don't have access to health care.
Did you hear that? Quote, nobody dies because they don't have access to health care. I'm pretty sure that's not true. they've gotten so used to lying that it's like, whatever, man, I don't know. What did Koch brothers tell me to say? Healthcare, nobody needs it. Yeah. No, if you don't get healthcare, you'll be perfectly fine. If you're sick, don't sweat it. Okay, I'll needlessly give you facts here, even though it's obvious on its face what a brazen liar Labrador is. Prior to the passage of the Affordable Care Act, the landmark law commonly known as Obamacare, some 45,000 Americans died annually due to their lack of health insurance, according to a 2009 Harvard study. That's why they attack academia, because they bring you facts. So they're like, yeah, facts are so biased. Don't listen to any professors. Don't listen to the media. Don't listen to journalists. Don't listen to scientists. Just listen to me. You don't need health care. Nobody ever died from not having health care. Taken together, this law cuts over $800 billion from Medicaid over 10 years, which is roughly the cost of the tax cuts on the high earners that it would enact. What a wonderful coincidence. And they explain that although, in this case, the Huffington Post, although the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office does not provide estimates of the legislation's fatality rate, it did project that the bill would deprive 24 million Americans of health insurance in its first decade as law. So, even if you were to give all the benefit of the doubt to our good friend Labrador here and said, hey, good boy, you're right, you could go to emergency rooms. Like, that's their big excuse for the Republicans. Okay, yes, if you break your ankle, you can go to an emergency room. By the way, good luck to you. It'll cost you so much money, it'll probably bankrupt the average American. Okay, that's in a twisted or broken ankle situation. What if you have cancer? Well, you can't go get treatments at an emergency room, but right before you die of all the tumors, you can show up in the emergency room and then they'll declare you're dead. Nobody ever died from lack of access to healthcare. If you haven't figured out how draconian the Republicans are, how barbaric they are, and how little they care about you and your healthcare, you're just not paying attention. Or you're one of their big donors who think, I'm going to buy plenty of healthcare with the $765 billion in tax cuts they just gave me. Warren Buffett came out today and said, what are they doing? Why are they giving us all these tax cuts for the rich? It's like on this tax cut alone, Warren Buffett just by himself is going to save $687,000 a year. He says, I don't need that. What we need to do is fix our health care because that's what's slowing our economy down. If you actually cared about jobs, you cared about the economy, you'd fix our health care and not destroy it just to give the tax cuts to the rich. But Labrador doesn't have a mind of his own. He's just a good little boy that serves his donor class. Go fetch, Raul, go fetch. Okay, I think you get a clear sense of how I feel about Labrador. Let's go on to Sally Yates. There we go. Okay, Mike Flynn's in a lot of trouble. He was the national security advisor for Donald Trump. Now he's being investigated for his ties to the Russians. Of course, he was fired. Donald Trump keeps complaining that people have been very unfair to him. Hey, dude, you fired him. I didn't fire him, you fired him. Okay, so Sally Yates is now testifying in Congress. Who is she? She was the Deputy Attorney General under Barack Obama, and actually for 10 days under Trump, she was the acting Attorney General for Donald Trump. Because obviously it was a transition period, he didn't pick her out of the blue. She was the Deputy Attorney General, and when the Attorney General stepped down, he allowed her to continue. She defied his order on immigration for legal and constitutional reasons, and he was furious and he fired her and then put his own person in. But one of the things that Sally Yates had done in that brief period of time is warned the Trump administration. She didn't go public with it. She warned the Trump administration internally, hey guys, be careful. Mike Flynn has talked to the Russians and talked to them about sanctions. And he told Mike Pence, the vice president, a different story. Mike Pence is publicly saying something that's wrong. In essence, she's trying to help them, saying, be careful, guys. Don't have Mike Pence say that. It's going to get you in trouble because Mike Flynn isn't telling the truth. So in her testimony today, she said, to state the obvious, you don't want your national security advisor compromised with the Russians. Fair point, it seems. One more description from the Washington Post. She explained that the Russians also knew about what General Flynn had done. And the Russians also knew that General Flynn had misled the vice president and others and created a situation where, quote, the national security advisor could essentially be blackmailed by the Russians. That's what she testified today. In fact, I want to give you some of her testimony afterwards. I'm going to give you Donald Trump's reaction, which of course, as usual, is predictably hilarious and wrong. So let's watch Sally Yates.
I had two in-person meetings and one phone call with the White House counsel about Mr. Flynn. We began our meeting telling him that there had been press accounts of statements from the vice president and others that related conduct that Mr. Flynn had been involved in that we knew not to be the truth. We also told the White House counsel that General Flynn had been interviewed by the FBI on February 24th. Mr. McGahn asked me how he did, and I declined to give him an answer to that. And we then walked through with Mr. McGahn essentially why we were telling them about this. And the first thing we did was to explain to Mr. McGahn that the underlying conduct that General Flynn had engaged in was problematic in and of itself. Secondly, we told him we felt like the vice president and others were entitled to know that the information that they were conveying to the American people wasn't true. We told him the third reason was is because we were concerned that the American people had been misled about the underlying conduct and what General Flynn had done. And additionally, that we weren't the only ones that knew all of this, that the Russians also knew about what General Flynn had done, and that this was a problem because not only did we believe that the Russians knew this, but that they likely had proof of this information. And that created a compromise situation, a situation where the national security advisor essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians. Finally, we told them that we were giving them all of this information so that they could take action, the action that they deemed appropriate. I remember that Mr. McGahn asked me whether or not General Flynn should be fired, and I told him that that really wasn't our call, that was up to them, but that we were giving them this information so that they could take action.
So now that seems very clear, but Donald Trump's not having any of it. Before she even testified, he yelled into Twitter, ask Sally Yates under oath if she knows how classified information got into the newspapers soon after she explained it to the White House counsel. He originally misspelled counsel. They had to spell check the man-child. And by the way, the Republicans are like, oh yes, sir. Now this is supposed to be an investigation about what happened with the Russians. But since Donald Trump publicly asked the Republicans to grill her on his pet peeve issue, well, here comes the Republicans to do exactly as Trump commanded them. Let's watch.
So for both of you, yes or no, as far as you know, has any classified information relating to Mr. Trump or his associates been declassified and shared with the media?
Not to my knowledge.
Ms. Yates?
Not to my knowledge either.
Okay. Have either of you ever been an anonymous source in a news report about matters relating to Mr. Trump, his associates, or Russia's attempt to meddle in the election?
No.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Did either of you ever authorize someone else at your respective organizations to be an anonymous source in a news report about Mr. Trump or his associates?
No.
No.
Okay.
So Trump tells him on Twitter, hey, ask these questions. Grassley, pretending to be a independent Republican for a long time, like, oh, I'm my own man, I'm a senator. Oh, yes, sir, yes, sir. How about the leaks? How about the leaks, huh? How about the investigation of what Flynn actually did with the Russians? No, of course, the Republicans tried to distract with, oh, no, the problem isn't that he had deals with the Russians. The problem is that we found out about it. Ooh, it gets terrible to get your hand stuck in the Russian cookie jar. So Trump also tweeted, General Flynn was given the highest security clearance by the Obama administration, but the fake news seldom likes talking about that. Okay, well, let's go to Talking Points memo. Three anonymous Obama administration officials who spoke to NBC confirmed that Obama, who fired Flynn as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency in 2014, warned Trump against bringing him into this highly sensitive role. So now Trump says, oh yeah, they gave him clearance. You left out the part where they fired him. And it turns out before Obama left, he tried to help Trump, again, like Gates, gave him a private, not public, a private warning. Hey, watch out for Flynn, he's not gonna help your cause. One of the Trump staffers acknowledged that Obama in fact did warn them. One of them said, well, we thought he was joking. Why would you joke about that? What kind of a weird joke would that be? I got a really great one for you, Donnie. Your national security advisor works for the Russians. Maybe a moron like Trump might think that that was a joke. Well, it turns out, Donald, the joke's on you. All right, I got to take a quick break here. When we come back, the humiliation of Ted Cruz. All right, back on the Young Turks. Oh, look at this. I have some old names left over from the journalism drive. I'm going to read them one last time. $27 from Ian in Louisiana, $27 from Maria in Connecticut, $50 from Courtney in California, and $100 from Freddie in Texas. Bless all your hearts. Okay, that was one last time for old time's sakes. Okay, so a couple of quick tweets for you guys. Derek Martin, Trump reminds me of Gordon Gekko, and Kushner reminds me of Charlie Sheen. Not the Wall Street character, just Sheen. That's really funny, actually. Tom Sherry says, I love how Trump idiot son Eric keeps exposing Trump's corruption. Me too, brother. And then I Am Sock writes, is Eric the dumbest Trump or the most honest or both? I'm going to go with neither. He's definitely not doing it out of honesty. He's a total knucklehead. He's the one that Trump trusts the least. He's like, all right, if I have a project, I'm giving it to Ivanka. Oh, she can't do it. I got to give it to fucking Donald Jr. Jesus Christ. God help me, right? Oh no, he's busy too. I got to give it to Eric. Oh, is Tiffany available? Right. So that's how it goes, but he is not the dumbest. Actually, the guy who's the dumbest is Donald. Look, don't get me started. People are massively underestimating how dumb Donald Trump is. Massively. He's preposterously dumb. Okay, I'm going to talk about that in the postgame a little bit today too, actually. We got three great topics for you guys in the postgame. I ran into Will Smith. Does he still hate us? I wound up on an American Airlines flight. How did that happen? And then I wound up off an American Airlines flight. Oh my God, it happened again. I'm not kidding. I'll tell you about that in the postgame, and then I'll get into how stupid Trump is too. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member, and members of the day are Leland Kern and Jameson Hetrick. Okay, two last stories for you guys in this hour. Whatever this hour means. Okay, so Sally Yates is in front of Congress and she's testifying in the Senate about the Russian connections that Mike Flynn has. Now this is very serious business. He's a former national security advisor and he lied about talking to the Russian ambassador about the lifting the sanctions. I mean, they're talking about the sanctions that the US has on Russia, and if Flynn is talking about those sanctions when he's going to become the national security advisor at that time, that's super serious. And is talking about coercion, and then he lied about it, which then opens them up to blackmail charges, etc. Now, as everybody else is talking about that, Ted Cruz decides, no, I'm going to do a couple other things. One, I'm going to grandstand. Two, I'm not going to talk about Russia at all because I want to deflect attention from my friend Donald Trump. And most importantly, I'm going to show people what a legal scholar I am. Now, Sally Yates was the deputy attorney general under Obama, and for a brief time, the acting attorney general under Donald Trump. Obviously, very well versed in the law, but Ted's going to stump her. Or is he? Oh, this is going to be awesome. So, first of all, he's going to cite a statute. No one knows what any of the exact statutes are off the top of their head. Of course, you'd check that before you wrote a brief, etc., right? So he thinks this is a good rhetorical trick. I'll get her with it. Let's find out if he, in fact, did get her.
Is it correct that the Constitution vests the executive authority in the president?
Yes.
And if an attorney general disagrees with a policy decision of the president, mm-hmm. a policy decision that is lawful, does the attorney general have the authority to direct the Department of Justice to defy the president's order?
I don't know whether the attorney general has the authority to do that or not, but I don't think it would be a good idea. And that's not what I did in this case.
Well, are you familiar with 8 U.S.C. Section 1182?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Well, it is the binding statutory authority for the executive order that you refused to implement and that led to your termination. So it certainly is a relevant and not a terribly obscure statute. Mm-hmm. By the express text of the statute, it says, quote, whenever the president finds that the entry of any alien or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem appropriate. Would you agree that that is broad statutory authorization?
I would, and I am familiar with that. And I'm also familiar with an additional provision of the INA that says no person shall receive preference or be discriminated against in issuance of a visa because of race, nationality, or place of birth. That, I believe, was promulgated after the statute that you just quoted. And that's been part of the discussion with the courts with respect to the INA, is whether this more specific statute trumps the first one that you just described. Concern was not an INA concern here. It rather was a constitutional concern, whether or not this the executive order here violated the Constitution, specifically with the Establishment Clause and equal protection and due process.
I hope you followed all that because that was so awesome. He's like, are you familiar with this section of the law? And then he reads it to her. He's like, oh, what do you think? And she's like, yeah, you knucklehead. How about the later provision that says this, which Trump was clearly in violation of? Oh, I wish I'd read that later provision. And she's like, that's the more specific statute. But on top of that, I'll sprinkle in my constitutional reasons, which you hadn't addressed at all. Okay, Ted, you're so embarrassing. I'm going to show you what happened at the very end in a little bit because you're going to love the ending of this story. But let's go for round two and see if Ted comes out any better in round two.
There is no doubt the arguments you laid out are arguments that we can expect litigants to bring, partisan litigants who disagree with the policy decision of the president. I would note on January 27th, 2017, the Department of Justice issued an official legal decision, a determination by the Office of Legal Counsel, mm-hmm. that the executive order, and I'll quote from the opinion, the proposed order is approved with respect to form and legality. 3 days later, you determined, using your own words, that although OLC had opined on legality, it had not addressed whether it was, quote, wise or just.
And I also, in that same directive, Senator, said that I was not convinced it was lawful. They importantly do not look outside the face of the document. And in this particular instance, particularly where we were talking about a fundamental issue of religious freedom, not the interpretation of some arcane statute, but religious freedom, it was appropriate for us to look at the intent behind the president's actions. And the intent is laid out in his statements.
A final, very, very brief question. Mm-hmm. In the over 200 years of the Department of Justice history, are you aware of any instance in which the Department of Justice has formally approved the legality of a policy, and 3 days later, the Attorney General has directed the department not to follow that policy and to defy that policy?
I'm not, but I'm also not aware of a situation where the Office of Legal Counsel was advised not to tell the Attorney General about it until after it was over.
Thank you, Ms. Yates.
Oops. Say, are you aware of this? Yeah, but how about the part where they didn't tell me about it? And that's also unprecedented. Thank you, Ms. Yates. Oh yeah, did you notice the part where you said it was it wasn't wise or just? So that seems like an opinion, not attached to the law. Did you miss the part where I also said it was unlawful? Whatevs. So someone took a picture right after this embarrassing back and forth with Ted Cruz, where he thought he was going to outwit her, and it didn't prove to be the case. Oh, what happened with Ted Cruz? Let's take a look at that picture. Okay, that's his seat right there. God, he dropped the mic and ran. Okay, didn't drop the mic in the right kind of way. So I know that these politicians, sometimes they like to run right afterwards because they're like, "Where's the cameras? There's the camera. Oh yeah, did you know?" And then once the cameras off, gump. Right? But believe me, that if he thought he got the better end of it, he would have mugged for the cameras a little longer and been there like. Oh, actually, we do have a picture of where he went afterwards. Let's take a quick look. Oh, you poor son of a bitch. I think we got some video too.
Hi, this is Ted Cruz calling. I was calling to encourage you to come out and vote on Election Day. This election is critical for the direction of our country, and I urge you to come out and support freedom, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights.
Saddest man in America. Can't get enough of it. All right, so let's do one last story for you guys. We got a poll for you all. Okay, that ain't right. That graphic ain't right. Okay. So Hillary Clinton is out of the woods, kind of, talking to Christiane Amanpour in an interview for CNN. And apparently she's ready to get back in the fight. Uh-oh. First, let's hear her out.
You know, I can't be anything other than who I am. And I spent decades learning about what it would take to move our country forward, including people who, you know, clearly didn't vote for me. I'm now back to being an activist citizen and part of the resistance.
Part of the resistance. Please, please, Hillary. Okay, what is she going to do? Is she going to put her walking boots on? Is she going to get out there, whether it's a protest, a Standing Rock? There's lead in the water in 3,000 communities across the country, not just Flint, not just Indiana, where we see. Is she out there fighting for unions or putting them? No, you're going to be shocked to find out. Her answer is she's formed a new super PAC. But it's got a great name, Onward Together. Super general nonsense. That I always say stuff like that. I'm with her, stronger together, onward together, 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 because it's not really specific at all. So, having learned nothing at all, her big answer is a super PAC. That's the resistance? No, it's not. You know what that is? We gotta be relevant. The Clintons have to be relevant. Chelsea, she's gonna run for office. Who knows? Maybe Hillary, let's leak a story about how Hillary Clinton might run for mayor of New York. Why not? Why not? I'm relevant. Donors, don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere, please. I'm still relevant. Bill's relevant. I'm relevant. Chelsea, yay, Chelsea. She could run. Plus, we got a super PAC. Hey, everybody, we got a super PAC. We're part of the resistance. They're resisting leaving the scene. Okay, that's what the resistance that the Clintons are a part of. So, now you remember. Of course, that there was this couple of famous pictures of her in the woods after the election, and people would run into her in the woods in New York, and then they'd take pictures. These are cute, bless her heart, okay? And then there's this one, now that's photoshopped from Saturday Night Live, but it's hilarious. I like that one, it's a Hillary sighting. So we're asking you guys, should Hillary join the resistance or go back into the woods? A, join the resistance, B, go back into the woods. TYTnetwork.com/Hillary. Now, Is it true that I have a sense of which direction that poll might go? Yes. But I want to see to what degree, right? Because we have, you know, a fairly large audience, a fairly young audience, and certainly a fairly progressive audience. So let's find out which way progressives think. Maybe they think, hey, you know what? We need Hillary in this fight. We need everybody in this fight. Totally possible. In fact, every single person in Washington would say that. Okay? And you might say, hey, you know what? We need super PAC money. Without those big donors, we're lost. We need the big donors too. Almost everybody in Washington would say that. What I'm curious about is what you're going to say. Okay? And by the way, this is a very rude poll. I mean, join the resistance, shouldn't everybody? Or go back into the woods? So I'm curious which way actual human beings are going to vote outside of Washington, D.C. In Washington, D.C., this poll would be 95-5. Oh, join the resistance, Hillary. Oh, yes, bring those big donors. We need big money. That's the way the DNC voted recently. That's what the Democratic Party says. I'm curious what you guys say. TYTnetwork.com/Hillary. What should she do? Are you guys looking forward to working with Onward together to be part of the resistance? Only one way to find out. Vote and tell us, and then we'll have the results for you, of course, on tomorrow's program, TYTnetwork.com/Hillary. I'm pretty sure I know which way I'm voting. Young Turks.